Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Kabbalah and Coffee. It is wonderful to see you all today. And today we're going to talk about the cosmic mirror. But before we get there, I want to talk about cameras. I have right here in front of me, and actually now in my hand, I have a Polaroid camera.
Oh my goodness.
This is a vintage Polaroid, fully functioning camera. Don't make me show you all how this works.
It's trendy again.
Yeah.
My daughter just bought one.
Polaroids are back in.
Yeah.
It's the coolest. Oh yeah, totally. It's the coolest. It, you know, you, we know how, remember how this works, right?
Yeah.
It takes the picture, it shoots out the little, the situation, probably literally the picture, huh? You don't shake it now. Apparently they're like, keep it covered and let it do its thing for 20 to 30 minutes. Because you don't want to mix up the chemicals. It's like a whole thing. So it turns out, and I don't know if you knew this, turns out that the camera manufacturing, the whole camera technology, is based on Kabbalah. You probably didn't know this, right? The secret to taking a picture, the secret to developing a picture, the secret to everything involved in the picture creation process is based on an unbelievable Kabbalistic teaching. And now you probably want to hear what that is, right? Or you'll say yes just because I really want you to say yes. So here we go. Let me share with you how this works. Okay, so here's some camera basics 101. This is a film, right? The Polaroid is film-based. So it's not like a digital sensor and whatnot. It's straight-up film. And on the film or in the film, especially a Polaroid camera, there are different layers. And each layer has a certain number of chemicals, specific chemicals that react in certain ways. But what allows a picture to develop onto film? What allows it to happen? What is the key ingredient? Help me out here. What's the key ingredient?
Light.
Light is the key ingredient, right? So long as the shutter does not open. Let me say that in a more straightforward way. If your shutter is not open, if there's no light coming in, what's happening? Garnished. You know what that means? Nothing. Nothing happens. Right? If there's no light, there's no picture. If there's no light, there's no image. If there's no light, there's none. All right, hold on. You'll see where I'm going with this in a second. Now, so what you need to do, so you have film, whether it's the old school negative in that roll, remember the old rolls of film? Remember the canisters of film?
Sure.
How awesome were they? Multi-purpose. As kids, we used to take those canisters of film and put coins in it. We used to use it for tzedakah. It used to be like if you came to school in the morning, so you had that, and you put that in your tefillin bag. You know, as kids, we had that tefillin bag. And you had a film, one of those film canisters, a little plastic thing, flip top, put your coins in there. And so every morning when you daven, you took out your prayer book, took out your canister, you cracked it open, you took a few coins, put in the tzedakah box, close it up, ready to pray. Because you're supposed to give tzedakah before you daven. So now what are you going to do? Take out your smartphone and with an app and probably give a few coins on your app and pay somehow digitally. Whatever, I guess things evolve, right? You can do that. There's definitely an app for that, right? Change for change. So here's the point. Someone should use that tagline. Here is the point. Without light and that exposure on your negative, on your film, and your Polaroid film thing situation, right? Without the light, there's no image. It's nothing. So when you press a shutter, what happens? Again, an old school, again, a digital camera, who knows what happens, right? It's a similar concept, but a camera, right? Use a camera, what happens?
The shutter,
so it opens, it allows light in for a very small amount of time, right? For a very small moment of time, and then it quickly closes again. So it exposes the film momentarily to light, and that creates an impression on your film. And then just as soon as it opens, it closes, and the image is now seared. What happens if there's too much light? What happens if you hold the shutter open somehow, if you're able to hold it open for a long time? What happens to the film? What happens to the negative?
Also
And what happens when it's overexposed? What do you see? You just see the light. You don't see the image. Too much light, and what do you see? Just the light. Now, if the shutter remains closed, then all you have is
darkness.
All you have is the negative. All you have is darkness. You don't have any light. So the chachma, the wisdom of photography and of cameras, is figuring out how to balance between the darkness and the light. How to get just enough light that you expose the image on the film or the negative, but not too much light that it's washed out, that it's overexposed, not too little light that it's underexposed. You with me on this?
Yeah.
Shutters. Oh, so now there's a few components. You have aperture. You know what aperture is?
Yeah.
Aperture is the thing that opens and closes. So the shutter, right? The shutter opens and then closes. But how big, when it opens, how big is the opening? How much light is it allowing in? So depending on the size of the aperture, so is how much light is getting in. So I'll just use an example. So I'll just hold my fingers in a circle. So imagine this is the opening, and it's closed, and then it's open, and then it's closed. So that's allowing in a certain amount of light. If it's smaller, and it opens and closes for the same amount of time, it's also allowing in light, but of course, the smaller the opening, the less light that comes in with the same shutter opening. You with me on this? All making sense, right? So that's why, if you're a professional photographer, you know all these things. And you know that that if you want to get a certain shot in certain conditions of light or create a certain effect, so you need to balance the aperture. How big is the opening? How big is the opening going to be when it opens? Number one. How quickly, how fast is the shutter speed? How long will that opening stay open? So there's two ideas. There's how big is the opening, and then how long will it stay open and expose the film to the light before it shuts down again, before it closes once again. So Samsung just announced their latest smartphone. The S9, yeah, Galaxy 9. And one of the innovations that they're touting is it's the first time that you have a variable aperture on a smartphone. And you can set it to either 1.4 or 2.5. Different settings. The lower the number, the wider it opens. It's kind of like the way the eye works, right? The pupil of the eye. So when it's dark, it opens up to allow in more light, and when it's bright, it gets smaller to allow in less light. So this is how a camera works as well. And again, now you have this technology appearing on smartphones. The first time that's been announced, that has been created. Bottom line is that the process of photography involves exposing film to light, but just enough that the image will appear, but not too much that it's going to get washed out. And so, the way I started this is by saying that this whole chachma, this whole wisdom and process and everything, it all comes from Kabbalah. Of course it comes from Kabbalah. Where else is it going to come from? So Kodak was a Kabbalist. I'm kidding. I don't know if there was a Kodak. I think it's just the name of a Kodak the Kabbalist. The Kabbalah of Kodak. That's a wonderful title. It's got K's all around.
I know the era of Kodak. They're out of business.
They are out of business. Probably somebody bought the name and they're like still using it.
They got the name because that's the sound the shutter made on their first camera when it clicked.
Oh, was that it? Yeah?
Yeah.
Made the old Kodak sound?
Could they just not keep up with technology? I mean, Kodak is Kodak.
They didn't innovate. Yeah, they lagged behind. They lagged behind. By the way, also, it's anything that stays stagnant, typically you're already backsliding. You know what I mean? You're already going backwards. I liken it to an escalator going down. If you stay in one place, you're going to find yourself back at the bottom. Unless you're actively climbing against that inertia, against that pull, you're going to be dragged down. Anyway, bottom line is that all of this stems from Kabbalah. Because Kabbalah talks about how the world was created. And the first thing that's created is light. You open up the book of Genesis, the first thing that's created is light. God's like, I need to take pictures of all y'all, right? We gotta take this for posterity. We need light. You can't have anything without light. But here's the cool thing. The way it's described in Torah is, and this is something we've covered in the last session, which was a few weeks ago, the Torah says that the unit of a day is comprised of Erev and Boker. Vayehi Erev, Vayehi Boker. It was evening and it was morning. So first you have the night, and then you have the light. When you take a picture, first the shutter is closed, and then it's open, and then it's closed again. That's the way it works. And so Kabbalah teaches, and that's why also the first name of God that's introduced in Torah, the third word of the Torah, Bereshit, in the beginning, Bara, created, Elohim, God. Not that God was created, but God created in the beginning. The Hebrew is a little bit out of the order in the English. But Elohim, the name of God that's used, is not the four-letter name of God, which indicates light, but rather the name Elohim, which indicates concealment. Because you have to start with a closed shutter. If you have a camera where the shutter doesn't close, and you pop a roll of film into it, you've just ruined your film. Because it's the second you pop it in, your film is now exposed. Because there's nothing blocking it. So you have to start off with darkness. You have to start off with concealment. Then you open it up to some light. Measured light. Light that's open only a certain amount. The aperture for a certain amount of time. Shutter speed, right? It has to be open only a certain amount and only for a certain amount of time to allow for creation to be infused with an imprint of something perhaps greater than itself. In other words, you're taking film and you're putting an image on it of something more transcendent. And that happens through light. Too much light, everything is washed out. All you see is the light. Too little light, all you see is the actual film. It's all you have. So what you need is just enough light to make it work. The world is similarly balanced in the same way. There is the state of natural darkness, if you will, where we don't see God, and that allows us to see the film itself, to see the stuff of creation. If there was too much light, everything would be washed out and overexposed. All you would see is God. We wouldn't self-identify. We wouldn't see ourselves as existing. We wouldn't feel ourselves. We would just melt away in spirituality and godliness. It's like, oh, that's a picture of white. What were you trying, like, what was there? I don't know, I just see the light. Too much light, and you don't see anything else. So too little light, and there's a danger of a world running amok, and sometimes maybe it feels like there's not enough light. Okay, and we'll work on that, and we'll talk about that today. But too little light, and you don't see God. You don't see any light. There's nothing. All you see is the negative. All you see is darkness. Too much light, and all you see is the light. So there's a fine balance between the Erev and the Boker, between the evening and the morning, between the darkness and the light. This is the secret, the Kabbalistic secret of creation, and how light is filtered into the world in such a way that it allows for the existence of a separate world, if you will, but it allows also the world to get a glimpse of something greater than itself. It's a very fine balance. And that's also the balance that we've discovered as human beings. But it's amazing to think of how the very fabric of creation, which is created through light, is also something used in this technology that we probably take for granted, certainly at this point with all the smartphones and digital technology. Please pass these around. Make sense so far? Yes? Yeah.
The photography, you buy a light.
Yeah.
What did you say?
There's a light meter.
You can buy a light meter if you're taking photography.
But what was the last thing you said?
So how do human beings do that?
Oh, human beings.
Let human beings adjust.
I think it's adjusted to us. A regular garden snail can only see once every 3 seconds. So if you wave your hand in front of its face real quick, it's like it never happened. So it seems like the light's adjusted to our sensitivity.
Right.
So we understand. understand.
So I think that we have some of that. Some of that is pre-designed for us to make it work. At the same time, I think Torah also provides us a template of how to work with the light that we have, and then how to increase the light, which is really the topic of today. When we talk about the cosmic mirror, which is how what happens below affects above, and then vice versa, a lot of that has to do with increasing the light, opening up the aperture, and letting the light bathe in a little bit longer. So, that's exactly what we're going to get to today. All right, let's begin. I want to pick it up. I want to get a running start, so we're going to go a little bit back and recap some of the stuff inside, and then we're going to move forward and possibly even break into chapter 4. This is all of this is just amazing, amazing teachings, and I'm very excited to explore this with you today. Let's begin. Let us begin on page 40. Hold on, where do I want to start? Not 40. Maybe 48 or 50. Let's see. Let's start from 48. Just because I referenced this a moment ago about the evening and the morning, and again, we'll get a running start. I feel like the last session that we had, we ran through some of the paragraphs on page 50 pretty quickly, so I want to recap those, and not only recap, but develop that, no pun intended, develop that a little bit more, and then we're going to move on to the new information. Page 48, right in the middle there. So it says, this explains the verse, and there was evening and there was morning one day. Creation began with the evening. At first there was darkness, denoting the contraction of the divine energy to allow for creation. So the first thing that happens, and by the way, when it says there, the contraction of the divine energy to allow for creation, in the Hebrew it's letzamtzem ha'ar. What is ar? Light. It's not energy. I don't know why this was translated as energy. Maybe the translators thought it was cool. But it's actually light. The Hebrew word there is light. So there's a limiting, a lessening, a diminishing, a darkening of the light. You close the shutter, and that allows for otherness to emerge. And thereafter there was light, the morning, symbolizing the subsequent revelation of chesed. This procedure engendered a sense of bittul. In other words, what happens is, the darkness, the state of darkness, when the light does not come in, that allows, so when God is hiding, that allows for creation to emerge and to self-identify. I'm here, I don't know about God. So that allows for otherness to flourish. What happens when the shutter opens and the light comes in? Suddenly that allows for creation itself, human beings primarily, creation to know or get a glimpse of God, which creates a sense of the language, the Hebrew word here is bittul. Bittul means a sense of a recognition of something greater than oneself. Bittul is typically translated, when I say typically, the last several decades when Kabbalah has been started to be translated in English, so bittul will typically be translated as self-abnegation or self-nullification, which means, in a sense, surrendering self to something higher. Well, you're not going to surrender to something higher if there's no light coming in, because what's higher? If all I see is this stuff, if I don't see anything higher, so what am I surrendering to? If the light never comes in, and this is all that there is, so that's it. So I'm surrendering to lower stuff, but that's not bittul. That's not what we're talking about here. But when you have not just the night, the erev, the evening, but you also have the boker, the morning, when you have the shutter, if you will, opening up, and now light does come in, measured, limited, but the light is coming in. Now you've set the stage for bittul. Bittul means that existence and creation can, number one, recognize that there's something higher or something else, see the light, and surrender to the light. What do I mean when I say surrender to the light? Very practically means acknowledge that there's something higher than just the here and now. So I don't just live for the here and now, but I recognize that there's higher purpose, higher meaning, higher values, God, spirituality, right? All of these things are born of the light that comes in. And this is the way God created it. if the shutter, if the shutter is never, if we never press this button, my Samuel Polaroid.
How old is that?
So this is actually, I'm glad you asked. Let me launch into this. So this is actually a company that bought Polaroid when under a few years ago. They shut down all the factories. So some enthusiasts, they were really into it. I think in 2008, they bought the warehouse and they bought all the supplies and all the they bought all the stuff off of them. And they bought the name. And they started kind of refurbishing and, you know, just remanufacturing these things. So now they're putting them out again.
I have one.
An original.
It's when I was like 10 years old.
Yeah.
11, 12.
Looks like this one?
No, it's black. And I think it's made out of plastic.
Yeah, this is plastic also. She takes pictures.
Instant print.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, Polaroids, right? It shoots out the film. Yeah, it's cool. You could, but you know, then you have to have a But then you have to have a printer with you, and that's. Yeah, this is like amazing. By the way, the way this works, it has like 15 layers. In that one square, there's 15 different layers with different chemicals. And there's a whole chain reaction that's triggered. The first thing gets exposed, the first layer gets exposed with the light, and then that triggers the next layer, and then it slowly releases down to the next one, until it exposes it. That's why you have to wait 20, 30 minutes for all the layers to get triggered. It's unbelievable. Here's the point. So the light, without the light, all you have is the other, is you don't see anything else. All you have is whatever it is. You have a piece of plastic, a square piece. It's all you have. Without light, all you have is biological life, existence. You have, you know, cells and atoms and whatever bouncing around, and that's all you have. But that's all you have. You don't have anything else. Until God opens up the apertures of heaven, if you will, opens up, you know, that which is closed to allow the world, the universe, to be exposed to divine light. And then suddenly creation can acknowledge, can see there's something higher, there's something greater, and something to live for, something to live toward, and something to surrender to as well. So that is the process of Erev and Boker, evening and morning, darkness, which is otherness, but only otherness, and then the light, which allows otherness to see that there's higherness than just otherness. Let's keep on moving here. This is also 48, second to last paragraph, which is just a one-liner intro. This is also the concept of tzedek and tzedakah. So there was a statement from the Zohar that we quoted on page 46, very esoteric statement, that says tzedakah awakens tzedek, causing them to bond as one, for only through tzedakah can tzedek be complete. Okay, again, without this explanation, that remains esoteric. There's tzedek and tzedakah, and tzedek needs tzedakah to be complete, and then they combine as one. But what does any of that mean? Sounds like just words and without any meaning. Tzedek means, and again, we did cover this last time, but we're just picking it up. Tzedek means justice. It can also mean justice, which is the idea of that which is closed. So it's like it's severity, it's strictness. It's not open, it's closed. The shutter is not open, it's closed. That's the level of tzedek. So tzedek on its own is not, okay, so you, tzedek allows for the creation of otherness, but that otherness now is going off and doing who knows what because there's no light, there's no chesed, there's no light coming in. So tzedek needs the light. The light is called tzedakah. So here we go. Tzedek, let's read it inside. Bottom paragraph from 48. Tzedek symbolizes malchut when it is a recipient from the gvurot, which means, basically, tzedek is a dimension of malchut, okay, as it gets from gvurot, which means it is constricted, it's closed. The initial building of Malchut is through the Gvurot. So how do you build Malchut, which spawns otherness? That's through Gvurot, that's through closing the shutter, closing the aperture and not allowing the light to pass in, to come in or to pass through. So without the light, you have now otherness, and that's Gvurot. The verse first states, let's continue page 50, his left hand is under his head, and subsequently the right hand embraces, referring to the revelation of the Chasadim, at which point Malchut is termed Tzedakah with an additional hey, representing the five supernal kindnesses. So what he says is, you have the left hand under the head. Left hand is the idea of Gevura and Tzimtzum and constriction and a closed shutter, darkness. And then the right hand embraces. The right hand is the open hand, if you will. That's the light coming in. So first you have the closed, which allows otherness to emerge. And then you have the open, the light coming in, which allows that which is now created to see something greater than itself and be exposed, like the film, to another image. So that is... So even in the film, right? So you have to keep... Back in the day with film, the film had to be in a canister. Right? What happens if you took the film in the canister and you pulled the whole thing out? You ruined it. Right? You ruined it. It has to exist in darkness. In other words, for the film, for those negatives, the film, to be film that has the potential to have an image on it, it has to be in the dark. So in order for creation to be creation, its own thing is creation, not just washed out light, it has to be in the dark. So it has to be closed. That's Gvura. That's Erev, it's evening, and it's left hand, and it's Tzedek. But then if you want to superimpose, if you want to impose, imprint an image, another image on the film, if you want the film to see something else, then you need the light to come in. And that is the boker, that's morning, that's right hand, that's chesed, and that is tzedakah with an extra hey. Not tzedek, but tzedakah with the extra hey at the end, which represents the five dimensions of supernal kindness. Okay, now let's jump in to the next paragraph, page 50. This fusion is also alluded to in the verse, Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem. And again, this is Abraham after the war of the five kings and the four kings. So he gave a tribute, he gave a tithe, he gave a tenth to this enigmatic, very mysterious king known as Malki Tzedek. Malki, by the way, means king. Melech, Malki means king. Malki Tzedek, King Tzedek, the king of Shalem. Okay, so this fellow is given a tithe by Abraham. So, which, by the way, giving a tithe is the idea of tzedakah, right? It's the light, that's the chesed, the kindness. So he says, what does this mean? This is implying the completeness of malchut, for it consists of both chesed and gvura, with chesed's revelation sweetening the severity of gvura. Why? Because you have malki tzedek, so tzedek is the constriction, when the aperture is closed. But then you have King of Shalem. Shalem means complete. And complete means that you don't just have a closed shutter, you also have an open shutter, which means that you have the darkness and the light and a balance of the two. So like I said at the opening, to take a picture, you need it to be closed, but then you need it to be open, and then you need to be closed again. You need a balance between darkness and light to produce an image. And even when it opens, even when the film becomes exposed, if it opens too much, washed out. If it opens too little, you can't see anything, it's dark. There has to be a balance, which is the idea of shalem. Shalem means peace. Peace typically means harmony. When you have peace, if you have two parties that are at odds with each other, and you want to create peace, so what you're doing is you're trying to synthesize these two opposites together. You're trying to create a harmony, a peace, a coming together of opposites. So the same thing is true when it comes to darkness and light. You have too dark, it's too dark. Too light is too light. So to have a picture where you can see, you know, the contours of a person, you can see the face, you can see a background, you can see shadowing, you can see color. All of these different features that make up a good picture, a good photograph, it's all about the right balance of light and darkness. That's what it is. You can't have just pure light. You can't have pure darkness. You have to have a balance of the two, and then you have a nice photograph. And so the same thing is true with the cosmic imprint, if you will, or photograph of this world, right? If this is the cosmic Kodak, and God is the ultimate photographer, if you will, of creation, so what it means is that this requires both darkness and light, closed and open, gvura, constriction, chesed, openness, left hand, right hand, tzedek, tzedakah, and that's Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem. Malki Tzedek, King of Shalem, is you have the tzedek, you have tzedakah being given, right? Abraham is giving him tzedakah to tzedek, right? So you're giving chesed to gvura, and it's called Melech Shalem, the King of harmony. Shalem means peace, but it also means harmony, right? Coming together. So that's this perfect blend of darkness and light that allows for there to be something existing, but also acknowledging something higher. Does stuff make sense? Yes? No? Not really? Not to you? Okay. All right.
I enjoy listening.
Okay. It'll make more sense as we go along. Here we go. Now let's continue. Third paragraph on 50 in the same vein. The verse says, Tzadka mimeni, she is right, it is from me. And let's get into the Kabbalah of this. The Kabbalah, the Kabbalistic interpretation being that the transformation of tzedek to tzedakah is mimeni, from me, so to speak, referring to the source of chesed. So again, Zugesund, if you have a camera, right? This is gonna be our constant prop today. If you have the old camera, so right now, this is probably what opens, right? Right there. Yeah, this is the lens, right there in the center. That's the lens. And if you look closely at the lens, there's no light, can't pass through. It's closed, right? You see it? It's got that plastic thing there. It's closed. It's closed.
Can we pass it around?
You could, yeah, why not? Hey, look. It works.
Oh, I thought you wanted me to pass it around.
No, pass it around. Why not? No, look at the other way. That way you can see through the viewfinder. But look through the lens in the center. It's closed. There's no light going through. So as long as there's no light, all you have is film. All you have is darkness. You don't have anything being exposed. There's no light. So first you have to have a closed shutter. We can take a class picture at the end just for kicks. Can you take a selfie? A selfie with a Polaroid. That's a thing now. I'm sure, huh?
Just like the one I have in the post office.
Oh, right. Exactly. Right. You can add it to the
collection.
Maza. Oh yeah, look at that. See that? Samsung Galaxy S9 camera. Judge for yourself. Yeah. Who knew? See, they're listening. The phones are always listening. They're always on. By the way, that's another advantage of this. You can't hack this. I mean, maybe you can, but it's so off the grid.
Listening.
Go hack this. Right now, like, my phone is connected with Google Photos, which means that the second you take a picture, it's already saved in the cloud, multiple copies, Google servers. There's no, and I could obviously disconnect that, but why would I want to? That's great. I get a copy of it and for posterity, you know, for wherever they're keeping it. Anyway, bottom line is, as long as this lens stays closed, as long as the shutter, aperture, whatever it is, stays closed, there's no light, so that's it. It's dark. It needs to open. The light needs to flood in a limited fashion to allow the film to be exposed and then produce an image. So again, all of this comes down to the same point. The world, the universe, creation itself is a balance between the dark and the light. Too much dark, we don't see God and the world runs amok. Too much light and all we see is God and then there's no self. Now what's the problem with that? The problem with that is God wanted us to discover Him. If there's no us, then it doesn't work. You with me on that? I'll say it again. God wants us to discover Him. If there's too much light, then there's no us discovering. It's just Him discovering Himself. If all you have is light, then it's a realm of God. But then who discovered God? No one discovered God. God wants us, self-defined beings, then seeing Him, discovering Him through these cracks of light that open up and that allow the light to come in a limited fashion. So the way God creates the world, not only once upon a time, first day of creation, there was darkness, the light, whatever, not only once upon a time, but every moment of our lives, there's darkness and there's light. we don't see God, and then we do see God. Maybe you wake up in the morning and you feel excited. So maybe that's, it doesn't have to be exactly sequential, right? So maybe you wake up in the morning and now you're seeing God. But then you go to work and you don't see God. And then you come home and see your family and you see God again. And then, you know, you got to do homework with the kids and you don't see God. I don't know, whatever. I'm just like, whatever it is, right? So there are moments of life where it closes and it opens and it closes and it opens, where you see less and then you see more. That's the way. That's the way that you have this blend between the two to produce self-defined creatures who might get it right and know God. Now, let us jump into, where are we? So are we up to the 50, second to last paragraph, or we did that?
No, we did.
This is also the meaning of the verse? Yeah. Okay, here we go. So second to last paragraph from 50. This is also the meaning of the verse, your right hand is filled with righteousness, tzedek. It says, look at this. It says in the Hebrew, tzedek mala yiminecha. Oh, and by the way, this is new. This is now entering new territory. It says, tzedek mala yiminecha. Your right hand is filled with tzedek. So now you see what's going on here. Tzedek, we said, is the close, is closed, closed shutter. Tzedakah is open. Tzedek is closed, justice. It's closed. Tzedakah is open. Tzedek, tzedakah. Left hand is closed, right hand is open. But here you have both. It says, tzedek mala yiminecha. Your right hand is filled with tzedek. So what's going on? So he explains. Tzedakah becomes filled with chasadim, kindnesses. And those chasadim reach us because of our giving charity and assisting the destitute who has nothing of his own. So what he's saying here is like this. Tzedek, the correlation between tzedek and the right hand is, when we give, what happens is, and this is straight up where we're headed. Okay, so let me introduce this, and then we'll pick it up back inside. There's a certain amount of light that comes in naturally by default. The camera setting, the cosmic camera setting, is set to a certain aperture and a certain shutter speed. It's allowing a certain amount of light, to come in for a certain duration of time. Preset. But you and I have pro mode features. You and I have access to professional controls. You know, like sometimes you have a camera and you either get the simple, the basic controls where you can just take the picture and it'll do it on its own, or you can get the professional, you can get the more advanced thing where you can now suddenly start tweaking things. If you know what you're doing, you can tweak how big the aperture is, how much light it's going to let in, how long the shutter speed will go. Maybe you want that effect where you see the cars driving at night and you see all the taillights and that streaking happening because you want the light to be exposed for a longer amount of time, whatever it is. So you kind of want that effect. So that's if you're a professional, you know what you're doing, you can tweak it. So here's the deal. Torah, you asked before about the light meter and whatnot. So I don't know if it's exactly what you were asking, but Torah gives us the professional controls. So we can now tweak the amount of light that comes into the universe. So here's the cool thing. He says, how do you tweak it? How do you bring in more light? How do you open up? How do you make the aperture itself larger and allow it to stay open for longer to allow more light in? Here's how it works. When we give, when we are open and generous and giving to others, then that happens on a cosmic level and comes back to us as well, where there's more openness and more light that comes down to us. In other words, the same idea of being either closed or open, right? That same construct, that same duality of being closed or open, like in the camera or in the heavenly apertures where there's darkness and opacity and then light. So that same duality exists with us as well, with you and I as well. So when we are close to someone else, when someone says, when someone's in need and we say, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to give, right? So that idea of being closed is like a closed shutter. But then being generous and giving is the idea of that shutter, if you will, that aperture opening up, and that chesed, that kindness, flowing forward. So that duality of being closed and open is modeled in our life and our experience as well. Now here's the cool thing. The more open we are, the more open God is. So when we give more, when we give, the more we give to others, the more God shines His light to us. So again, how do we trigger? How do we trigger an opening of the aperture? How do we trigger a longer shutter, right? The shutter should stay open for longer, cosmic on a cosmic level. It's by us giving. It's by us being generous. So let's read it now inside, again, the last paragraph, and I'll finish the paragraph and you'll see how this is what it says. And I should tell you, honestly, it's easier to learn it from the Hebrew because I feel like the English is a little bit, I don't know, it at least it throws me off a little bit, and it doesn't, it's not as precise as the Hebrew. But in the Hebrew, it's exactly what I'm saying that this is. It's when we, the more open we are, the more open God is. So the more light, and not light, but cash really, but the more light we give to others, the more light gives God gives to us. So, but let's read it inside. Tzedakah becomes filled with chasadim, kindnesses, and these chasadim, kindnesses, reach us because of our giving to charity and assisting the destitute. So, in other words, God opens up and gives to us when we give to others who have nothing of their own. These acts, in other words, these acts of kindness, human acts of kindness, elicit an awakening from on high, and as a result, your, God's right hand, is filled with tzedek, righteousness, and tzedek is then transformed to tzedakah. So, how is it that we go from divine concealment to divine revelation? How do we go from God's cosmic shutter or aperture from being closed to open? How does that happen? What pulls the trigger? What pulls the trigger? It's our acts below that pulls the trigger. Now, even if we didn't do anything, there would still be a default amount of light that comes into the universe, because it has to. God created the world, and by default, there is a certain amount of light that's... Can you pull it? Yeah, thank you. There is a certain default amount of light that is coming in. But the point here is that if you want more light, if you want to enjoy personally more light, and if you want the world to enjoy more light, then what triggers that shutter? What makes it happen? What makes it happen is our acts of kindness. When we give, when we open ourselves to others, God opens Himself to us. When we... understand what I mean when I say this, please. When we expose ourselves to others, right, in a good way, right, when we give generously, and it's not only money, although here it's about the mitzvah tzedakah, which is literally about helping the destitute, but it's about being there for another. It's about making ourselves vulnerable to another. When we give, when we share with others, God shares with us. So instead of being closed, it's now open, and that's an amazing thing. There was once a fellow, rabbi once went to somebody, a great rabbi once went to somebody to ask for a very important cause. And the fellow said, and this fellow had you know, was known to be wealthy, but not necessarily so giving. So the rabbi said, you know, I'd like to ask you for this cause. And the fellow said, you know, I'm very discerning about the cause that I give to, and you know, it depends on what the cause is, etc. And the upshot, the lesson that the rabbi wished to convey to this individual is that it's in our best interest sometimes to be a little less discerning than more discerning. Why? Because each of us wants blessings from on high. Each of us wants the heavens to open up and rain down goodness and blessing and light and health and all the blessings that we need. God, we want God to shine those down upon us. And the question is, do we want God looking with a microscope at us? Say, okay, wait a second. I gave this person good health last year. What did they do with it? I gave them 365 days of good health. Let's say, please God, right? We should all be healthy, right? 365 days of good health. What did they do with it? Did they really? I mean, I invested in this person. Did they really give me a good return on my investment, or did they, you know, waste time? And they did some good, but a lot of it was just wasted on stuff, taking it for granted and not being thankful and not really, you know, leveraging it for something positive. Yeah, do we want God looking at us like that, or do we want God just to keep on giving us good things and to keep on giving us good things? I think we would all say the latter. No one wants to be under the divine microscope. That's not a thing. No one wants to be audited. Not that God is looking for, I'm not saying that God is looking to get us or whatever, God forbid. But no, we want indiscriminate good upon us and our families and our loved ones and our communities, right? We want just goodness. And so the message here is, and this is where the title of the class, The Cosmic Mirror, comes in. If we want that to come down upon us from God, then we need to reflect that in our actions below. And so that means being a little less discerning, a little less microscopic, a little less putting others under the microscope and saying, well, do they deserve it? What are they going to use it for? This and that. It's always better to err on the side of generosity and giving and kindness and love than the other way. Because again, based on this idea, we understand that when we give, it's not just an act between me and the other person. It's not just a human exchange, but it's actually a cosmic experience. This one act of me giving or not giving to the other person creates a chain, a ripple effect. It's not just an isolated act happening, you know, in one street corner in the universe, but it actually has a cosmic effect. This is where the cosmic mirror comes in. It's being now reflected upon high. And that's the way the heavens now, if you will, are operating with me and with the whole world. Is the light going to come through? Is God going to share? Like, is it going to come through? Is it going to be shared? Is it going to be generous from above? Or is it going to be more constricted? And a lot of that has to do based on how open we are to others.
Yeah, I wondered if you would comment in that last paragraph, in that verse from the Zohar, where it seems almost like it comes out of nowhere, who has nothing of his own.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he could have just ended it by saying and assisting the destitute.
Yes.
And so there must be something there.
There is. Let me explain. Great question. Yeah. The Zohar says, and that does 84, 484, that quote does come from the Zohar. It's a reference to the sphere of Malchut. Malchut is likened to the moon. The Les Lam Migar Miklum. It does not have anything of its own. There's no light of its own. So that's symbolic of so many things, including creation in its most default state before God reveals the light. In its most default state, without God opening up heaven a little bit, I don't literally mean heaven, but opening up from the spiritual realms and giving us light, whether it's default or whether it's triggered through our actions, either way, without that, there's no light. There's no light. Creation itself is a self-contained entity that is spiritually dark, that is On a divine cosmic level, it's dark. It's just creation. It's a closed system. It's like anything that a human being would create without opening up a pipeline between it and the next, between creator and creation. The creation just remains closed in and of itself. So that's what it means. It has nothing of its own. There's no light on its own. It does not exist in the with any form or realm of light, unless God opens up the apertures of heaven. God opens up the closed shutter, and now the light floods in. Again, there's two ways that can happen. Either default, which is a very limited, a very thin line of light, or through our actions, as we'll see in a moment, the more we give, the wider the aperture becomes, and the longer it stays open, the more light comes in.
So just to finish up then, so who has nothing of its own is more that sense, the receiver.
Yes, and 100%.
For us to be the giver, and Malchut is the receiver.
Yes. In other words, what it's indicating to us through those words is that without divine light, we don't have any light. There's no light. There's no light unless there's divine light. And how do you get the divine light? There's no light without divine light. I mean, there's no light. There just isn't light. And how do you get that light? It's by you opening up to someone else. It's when we open it up to someone else that God then opens up to a greater extent to us. And again, there is a pipeline that's open up regardless, but that's a very limited fashion, and it might be that it's very faintly discernible.
Has nothing of his own either.
Say it again?
The person who gives has nothing of his own either.
That's also true. That's also true. That's a perspective in giving as well, that all we're doing is giving what we've been given to give.
So tzedakah is just the giving. You don't care what the recipient does with the money.
Now, so the caveat is, of course, proceed with caution, and we don't want to harm somebody else through giving. So if we know that it's going to be harmful. I remember walking through Times Square once, a number of years ago, and somebody was in the streets, and they had a sign that says, I want money for alcohol and drugs. And then the bottom line said, at least I'm being honest. But it was fun. People were actually giving to the... Because it looked like it was more of a joke, because like everyone's always thinking that, and this person's just putting it straight down there on the cardboard sign. So if we know, the reason why I mentioned that is to address your question, as a potential response. If we know that the person is going to use it for destructive purposes, then maybe it's not a good idea to assist in that negativity. So there obviously has to be some sort of balance there. But the question is, in that gray area, which side should we fall on? More discerning, or a little bit more open? The point of this is going to be a little bit more open than more discerning. Because yeah, and again, if you know that the receiver it's gonna go for a negative purpose, then maybe you don't. There's no mitzvah to help someone get hurt.
But you know, when you give and donate, you get this good feeling, so you know your aperture is open a little. You
right.
can feel it inside you.
Right. Right.
And then you don't have to worry about what they're going to do with the money.
Correct. Again,
if you're going to give, you make sure that it's a good organization.
Right. So all within a certain amount of balance. But again, within that balance, it should be tilted. The needle should be tilted toward being more open than less opening. Again, with the understanding that number one, it benefits the other. So it's a wonderful human thing to do on a very basic, menshi level. But as we're discussing today, and this is a Kabbalah, right? This is a Kabbalah class, is that it literally has an effect above. And the whole interplay of reality only works when you have both the darkness but then the light. Otherwise, you don't have a picture if there's no light. And what allows the light to come in a little bit more and get that a better shot, if you will, a better picture, a nicer picture, a better, more focus, and just a nicer picture, a nicer looking world, is when there's a little bit more light. There's a little bit more light. And we can... Say it again? Right. And again, that's what the rabbi was telling the person. It's like, do we want God looking, right? Do we live the way you want God, deal with others the way you want God to deal with you? By the way, that's why I started off by, I mentioned that, remember the film canister with the money? In the tefillin bag, giving tzedakah every morning? And I said, it's a good Jewish practice to give tzedakah before davening. Why? What do we do when we daven? What we do when we pray, part of it is, of course, asking for what we need. In the Amidah, we ask, there's 18, 19 blessings that we ask God for what we need. We want wisdom, we want forgiveness, we want health, we want parnasa, strength, we want redemption, we want all these things. We want. And it's the highest prayer of the service, where we whisper the words so that only we can hear it. We're standing before the King, we stand at attention with our feet together. It's the holiest of prayers, and we're asking for our own needs. But before we ask for our own needs, are we attentive to the needs of others? If we want God to give to us, are we modeling that behavior? It's like, whatever, it only makes sense if we're asking God, don't look so closely, just give me what I need, because I need it. So are we doing the same for others? That's why it's a Jewish practice, again, to give tzedakah before davening. Yeah.
I have personal experience with working in a homeless shelter. I served breakfast for about 6 months. I used to get up at 4:30 in the morning, making scrambled eggs, toast, all that stuff for 300 people.
Wow.
And I can tell you that it was, I got more out of it than they did. It was a lot of work. I was tired all the time. I had bags right. under my eyes, but it was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, honestly. And when they asked for seconds, I wasn't supposed to give seconds. I always gave seconds.
Nice.
I broke the rules. I didn't care. When a little kid comes up to you and says they're still hungry, what
right.
are you going to do?
Right.
And
amazing mitzvah. Amazing. Incredible. Incredible.
And
the point of this today is that it's not just them that's benefiting by the food. And it's not just you that's benefiting with the satisfaction of being there for someone else. But it's also literally on a spiritual, cosmic level, it's bathing the world in more light. It's exposing the world to more light. And that's a good thing. The world needs more light, as much light as it can get. Don't worry. If we're at risk of overexposure, we'll let you know. But right now, we need more light coming in. Take a look at 52. Here we go. Take a look at 52 at the top. This then explains the Zohar statement that only through tzedakah can tzedek be complete. Right, the Zohar, the enigmatic original statement of Zohar at the beginning of this chapter, chapter 3. Only through tzedakah can tzedek be complete. What does it mean? Tzedek is closed. A closed system, a closed world, closed off to the light, is not so amazing. Look at that. See? Paying it forward. Look at that. Right? A closed system, tzedek, is not ideal. So how do you fix, how do you salvage tzedek? Through tzedakah. Through charitable giving. Literally. Tzedakah. When you give, that allows more light to come in and you're fixing the closed system of tzedek where you have darkness prevailing. The term complete refers to the completeness of Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, i.e. the fusion of Chesed and Gvura. So you have Tzedek closed, you have Tzedakah open, and that's triggered through giving literal Tzedakah below. And this, as he just says the last sentence, which I preempted, and this can only be achieved through Tzedakah, literal giving, as the verse states, with Tzedakah you shall be established. In other words, Tzedakah creates the reality that we wish. So again, the more open we are to giving, the more we expose our blessings and give them, expose them to others, the more God exposes His light to us, and that's the cosmic mirror. The heavens operate in a way that is commensurate to the way we operate. That's the way God created this system. God could unilaterally take care of everything, but that's not what He wanted. He didn't want to unilaterally just create the light and create the goodness and create all the blessings and all that stuff, because then there's no interplay. God wanted a world that's working with Him. So there, hence the mirror. What we do below has an effect above. It's mirrored above, and then it comes back down to be with us. You know, one of my favorite and also non-favorite, I have a weird relationship with this parable. But hear me out. There's the old parable of this builder who worked with an architect. So there was the architect who designed the houses, and he worked with a builder, with a contractor who built the houses. And they worked together for decades. They had a wonderful relationship. And the builder wanted to retire. It was a number of years that he'd been building, and at a certain point in time, you have to hang up the hammer. I feel like I've reached that place early on in life, but whatever. And for him, it happened after a few decades. For me, it happened before I started, whatever, right? As we've discussed many times. He's almost done. The architect says, wait, I have one more home. I have one more home that I want built, that I want you to build. He says, okay, fine, I'll do it. But he's not into it. In his mind, he's already retired. And so he cuts down on the quality of the materials. And he cuts corners on the workmanship and all the stuff that goes into the home. It's not his greatest achievement. And the architect doesn't know. But when the building is done, when the home is finished, the architect says to the builder, we've worked together for a number of years, and I wanted your last project to be yours. So here are the keys to the home. And the builder's like, oy vey, that's now my home. Whoops. And then he flipped it. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Whatever. Right? That's today's...
Scott,
No, I have not, but I can only imagine. Anyway, the bottom line is, right, so I kind of like it. I also don't like it because, like, such a trap, like, that he has. There's so many, I have mixed emotions with that parable, but that's a parable that's used. But what's really the point? The point is, we live in what we build. We live in the reality that we build. It's not another reality that's outside of what we do is what we get. What we invest is what we get back. It's, if we live in a world of no generosity and no giving, then we're not going to have divine light either. It's just the world that we live. You get what you give. And not only from others, but on a divine level, on a cosmic level, you get what you give with God. So you give to another human being, God responds in kind. So the more generous we are in giving to others, the more light and cash we shine and give to the other, the more God gives us this. So again, tzedek is redeemed through tzedakah. Tzedek is closed, is darkness, a closed shutter. So otherness is great, but it's all there is. It doesn't see the light. It doesn't have that higher sense of anything greater than itself. Tzedakah allows the light to come in because it too is bathing the universe in light, in my light to others and others to others. So when we share our light with others, God shares His light, a greater light, with us. Let's continue. And this is where it gets amazing. Because here we get into the different apertures. I think in camera terminology, it's called in photographisms, it's called the f-stop. Is that correct? Yes?
Yeah.
F-stop? F-speed.
Yeah.
The f-speed. So the speed of the aperture is really how big it is, right?
I'm trying to remember what the F stands for.
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's like a water faucet. It's like a water faucet. If you want to fill your sink, you can drizzle the water. It takes longer for the sink to fill up.
Right.
You can turn the
there you go.
Blast, your sink will fill faster.
Right. So the small, right, like the eye, exactly. So the right, which we said contraction. So if it's wider, if it's bigger, and then you have the same like 1/10 of a second. It's open, it'll let in this amount of light. If it's smaller, if it's only dilated or whatever, only a little bit, and it's open for the same 1/10 of a second, it'll only let in a little bit of light. All right, that's how it is. So here's the key. How do you get more light brought...
Foot candles.
What is it? What is it? No, what is it?
Foot candles.
Foot candles?
That's what F
really?
Foot
candles.
Yeah, it's an old form of measurement. I think it's from like the English pound.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
fascinating. Who would know? All I know is that it's like the F is kind of like italicized, so it definitely stands for something else. So here's the point. How do we make it broad? How do we make it bigger? How do we make the aperture bigger? So how do you open it and close it? Listen to this. How do you open it and close it every time you give? You got something else?
Yes, focal length.
Focal length?
Focal length, yeah.
Focal length.
Okay.
What the pupil is doing as well.
Right.
So when it narrows down, you're focusing closer. When it opens up, you're getting more light.
Interesting.
Basically.
So here's the deal. When we give to someone else, when we give, that opens it up. But when it opens up, how much light is coming in at that moment? How much light? He says now the rest of chapter 3 is, it's based on how generous we are. So listen to this. Every instance of generosity, of giving, allows light to come in. It opens up the shutter. It allows the light and then it closes, right? It allows light to bathe, to come in, and then it closes again. So every time we give, light comes in. But how much light? So that depends on how broad we're giving. That's how broad, on a cosmic level, because of this cosmic mirror, that's how broad the light from above will be. Does this make sense? So the more generous we are below, the more generous on high. So there's two elements. There's frequency in giving, which is quantity. I guess both could be quantity. Whatever. There's frequency of giving, and then there's the amount of giving, Maybe you do quantity and quality, or maybe not. It doesn't really matter. The point is there are these two elements. So let's continue 52, second paragraph, and now we start developing the idea of how broad the light will be, how broad that opening is that's allowing the light in.
The amount you give or the proportion you give?
Good question. Let's see if we can pick up some clues. I have the same question. 52, second paragraph. Although I would like to think the latter, not the former. In other words, it's proportion based on what, it's generosity based on what the person can give, as opposed to straight up dollar amount.
The less of yourself you feel, the more you're able to give, I think.
Yeah, and the more open it is, yeah.
Frequency is a measure of time. It's a unit of time, which is finite.
Right.
Einstein proof. But basically, I think it's simple for frequency.
Okay, good.
Can be mathematically verified.
Nice.
Believe it or not, it's true.
Okay, cool. Let's jump in. 52, second paragraph. Although these chasadim, these divine dimensions of kindness, which means the light coming in, although these chasadim contain myriad levels, in other words, the quality of light coming into the world, to the universe, has many, many different levels of light. They are generally divided into two categories, outer chesed and inner chesed, also known as Rav Chesed, abundant kindness. Let me explain this. These are Kabbalistic terms, so that's why it's in quotation marks. There's chesed de levar and chesed de legav, outer chesed and inner chesed. Now, let me give you the quick version of this. The quick version is outer is lower, and inner is higher. Outer means less quality. Inner means greater quality. That's the way it is. Outer is not as lofty. Inner is more lofty. So when you talk about divine kindness flowing into the world, which we're using today the example of a camera and the notion of light. So the divine aperture opens up, or the divine shutter opens up, allows light coming in. Two levels of light. Outer chesed, outer kindness means the light is thin, the light is limited, a little bit more limited. Inner chesed means it's broader. Generally speaking, there are two categories. But let's continue. More specifically, third paragraph. More specifically, he's going to now say three different dimensions of chesed, of divine kindness. There is chesed associated with the emotional faculties, which is kindness, the way we feel it in the heart. And chesed associated with the intellectual faculties, kindness that we have in the mind, which is another form of kindness. As well as that associated with the level that transcends chachma. There's a chesed, there's a kindness that transcends intellect. And he quotes a verse from the Torah, from the Bible, that says, he preserves notzer, he preserves kindness for 2,000 generations. Notzer chesed lo alafim. It's part of the 13 attributes of divine mercy. We sing it on the high holidays. Hashem, Hashem, ke'orachum v'chanun, erech, apayim v'rav chesed v'yemes. Notzer chesed lo alafim. He preserves kindness for 2,000 generations. That's this right here. Preserves kindness for 2,000 generations. So here we see an association between chesed, kindness, and 2,000. Now, thousands, we've said previously in this discourse, 1,000 corresponds to a dimension that transcends intellect. We had a whole thing about single digits, double digits, triple digits, four digits, five digits. So 2,000 is higher than intellect. So what he's saying here is like this. There is chesed in your heart when you feel kind. There's chesed in your mind when your mind turns to a more generous approach in your mind itself, in intellect itself. And then there's a way that even on a transcendent level, there's also chesed. Now, what that looks like or feels like, maybe we'll be able to explore that next week. But there's different levels of chesed, different levels that we call chesed. So the point is, there are different types of divine giving as well. Limited, broader, and then like almost a transcendent type of giving. As explained above, let's continue in that third paragraph. As explained above regarding the digits that were single, double, and tens of thousands, each of these levels correspond to loftier levels respectively. And the same thing is true with divine kindness. You can have divine kindness in a more limited fashion, in a larger capacity, and then almost an unlimited capacity as well. And here we go. And while acts of kindness generally elicit a flow of chesed from on high, in other words, every time we give, that opens up the shutter and allows light to come in, and generally speaking, right? You give, God gives. Although that's the general formula, let's continue after the brackets, the last paragraph of chapter 3, it is the magnitude of the act. And again, how do you define magnitude? We could do it two ways, either dollar amount or how much it means to you as an individual, or to you and I as individuals. But he just says magnitude of the act. It is the magnitude of the act which determines the level of chesed elicited from above. So, let's continue. As explained elsewhere, he's going to go explain something else. So, the more we give, the more generous, not just frequent, but the more generous we are in giving, the more we're opening ourselves, the broader we open ourselves, the more broadly God opens up Himself to us, and the more light comes in.
I'm confused on the I gotta understand outer, inner.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand emotional, intellectual, and transcendental.
Yeah.
But they're related to each other. The inner outer is related to the.
So what he's saying here is when we give, we can also give. We can also give in a more limited way or in a transcendent way. Here's the question. If there's something that's a need, a very basic example. There's a need that's out there. And now we're thinking, okay, I want to give to this cause. But I can only give a certain amount. Because that's what makes sense. So my chesed is now limited to the mind. Right? Let's do three levels. Three levels of giving for human beings. I can give based on how much love I feel in my heart. I can give based on how much my mind tells me to give. Or I can give in a way that transcends the heart and the mind, which means I just give even though it doesn't make sense for me to give this much. And logically, I would say, wait, I can't give this. I can't afford it. I can't. How's this going to work? But I say, you know what? All of the intellectual calculations are going out the window, and I'm just going to be generous. That elicits chesed from the transcendent dimension. So we talk about God's kindness being emotional, quote unquote. God's, right, we're not limiting God to emotions. But God's chesed, God's kindness, the light that comes in, being either the level of emotion, intellect, or transcendence. How do we get that transcendence? It's by us being a little bit more transcendent in our giving. And even, forget money for a second. Somebody needs our help. Do we tell them, I'm sorry, I need to go to sleep now? Right? Sorry, I have something else to do. Or do we say, you know what? I'm going to overextend myself to be there for you, even though it doesn't make sense. That means transcendent chesed. That means chesed higher than seichel, higher than intellect. It doesn't make sense. It's irrational, super rational. But I'm there for someone else. That triggers super rational chesed from above. So what he's saying here now is, every time we give, the heavens open up. But how we give, triggers how God gives as well. So the mirror is not just a hit, a give. It's how you gave. What you gave is how God gives, what God gives. So there's a very tight correlation in this cosmic mirror between our actions and the supernal response on high. It's very, very much tightly connected. So let's continue. Let's knock it out. Then we'll discuss it, and then we'll close it out. I don't mean knock it out, but let's finish to the end. So let's continue second. Let's just start from the last paragraph of chapter 3 once again. And while acts of kindness generally elicit a flow of chesed from on high, it is the magnitude of the act which determines the level, the precise level of chesed elicited from on high. So again, depending on how we give is how God gives. As explained elsewhere regarding the verse, the kindness of God does not cease, So it says that the infinite kindness of God, the inner chesed, which is without limit or measure, is awakened and elicited when one donates to charity, disregarding the halachically prescribed limits of a fifth or a tenth, but choosing to go beyond the requirements of the law. See there at length. What he says here at the end is what I mentioned a few moments ago. How do you get chaste Hashem ki lo yisamnu? How do you get the kindnesses of God that are unlimited? How do you get unlimited divine kindness? It's by us, you and I, giving also in a way that's a little bit more unlimited. It's by us not saying, well, I'm only supposed to give a tenth, so I'm giving a tenth, or even a fifth, 20%. I'm only giving a fifth, but no more than how Jewish law says that giving generously, that giving is a tenth of one's income one should give, ideally up to one-fifth, but not more than one-fifth. If you give more than one-fifth, that's 20%, it could have a negative effect. You know, you can stop being able to give anymore after that if you give more than 20%. That's what halacha says. The Alter Rebbe, though, says in Tanya that since when are we so... he says, if you're giving tzedakah because you need light in your life, it's like if somebody, right, God forbid, is sick, and they need to go to the doctor. Do they make a calculation? I can only pay medical bills up to a fifth of my income because otherwise it's too... No. Whatever it costs. You go into debt even to pay the medical bills because you need health. If you need light, then why only a fifth? You see what's going on here? Is it making sense? So hold the question for a second. So the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, very, very clearly. He says, yes, Jewish law says a tenth or maybe up to a fifth. But if it's about a spiritual cleansing and spiritual health, so then you can disregard the limits. And so what he's saying here is, when a person is giving in a truly unlimited fashion, when I say truly unlimited, it means they're not being so precise to count up every single cent. How much have I given? Did I give too much? Should I stop giving? A person, there's a need here. I'm not even going to think about what's going on. I'm going to give. The moment is, this requires giving, and I have, and I'm giving. When we're in that mode, and we're not being so calculating, then that also triggers the same above, and God also gives in a way that's not so calculating. That's how we get the chaste Hashem ki lo yisamnu, the kindness of God that's lo yisamnu, that's not ceasing. In other words, the unlimited flow from God. So, to recap what we spoke about today, let's just recap and close out, and then we'll go offline. We'll take questions. So, just a quick recap. We spoke about the Kabbalah of Kodak. I love that. The Kabbalah of cameras. This is a Polaroid, but the Kabbalah of cameras. And we spoke about how you need an interplay of light and darkness. You can't just have light. Too much light overexposes and it's washed out. It's all white. Too much darkness. You don't have an image. There was nothing exposed on it. It's just the film itself. It's just the substance. You don't have any light. So you need an interplay. It has to be dark. The shutter has to open to allow in the light, but it has to close. God created the world first. Darkness and then light. First the shutter is closed and then it's open and then it closes again and then it's open. This interplay. And by default, a steady stream, you know, back and forth, but a steady stream of light, thin stream of light, flows in to just give enough light to keep us honest, but not too much to make us see too much, but just a little bit of light. What Kabbalah teaches is that every time we give, we can trigger another instance, an extra instance of the shutter opening up and God's light flowing in. And how we give determines the amount of light that's flowing in at that moment. So I think we all like the light. We all need the light. So based on what we've talked about today, it's a good thing to be generous. It's a good thing to be giving. And how we give determines or can affect, due to the cosmic mirror, can affect in profound ways how much light we get from above. May we give, and may we get far more than we give. Thank you very much for joining me today for Kabbalah and coffee.